Blog Talk Radio.
The Healing Circle is a panel composed of spiritual teacher Kat Edwards and myself, David Clark, a former social worker. We come together every week for topical discussions in which we share our experience, strength, and hope about everyday life. From depression to connection, we cover all the issues you feel and see as you walk life's sacred journey. Listeners are encouraged to call in and contribute to the show because we all have hard-earned wisdom we need to share. Join us every week at the same day and time. For today's show, we're going to be talking about the business of marriage, so please feel free to participate or to just listen. So let me welcome my co-host, Kat. Kat, how are you tonight?
I'm wonderful, thank you, David, and how are you?
I'm doing well, I thank you too. So what's new in your world?
Oh, it's hot here in Australia. It's summer and I'm melting. Oh my goodness.
Well, it's just the opposite here, and I have a kitty cat playing with a piece of paper, which I'm going to retrieve in just a moment. I don't usually let them in here when I'm doing a show, but they've been behaving so well tonight, I thought, why not? At any rate, the business of marriage, that's an interesting topic, and I'll be glad to hear your take on it, and I've got my own ideas too, so would you like to start us off?
I'm by no means a marriage expert. I just want to put that out there, though I have had a couple of relationships, and I'm currently in a relationship I've been in for about 11 and a half years. So, and that's produced a couple of lovely little children, and we've raised two boys. My boys were 10 and 12 when David and I started to see each other. So we've seen them into adulthood as well. So that you could say there's been some level of success there in our union because we've managed to stick it out this long and produce the children we have. But it's, you know, when you find somebody and you're a good match, there may be a good match on many levels, but one of the things that I often hear from my clients is they're not necessarily a good match when it boils down to the business of marriage, which is not just the financial aspect of marriage. It's the equal share of the duties within the relationship, running the house and putting the actioning on opportunities, getting domestic chores done, putting together plans and goals for the future. Some people do really, really well in that, but then what we really want is a balance across most of the aspects of a relationship. So if you're really compatible in the bedroom, but you're not doing too well in keeping your goals together and on track, then that's when the business of marriage isn't working out well. And it's really important to recognize that it's not just financial contribution that is considered the business of marriage. It's also contribution towards the running of day-to-day life. What do you think, David?
Well, I, too, am no expert, although I've been in three long-term relationships and I'm in my second marriage. I agree with most of the things that you've said. I don't disagree with anything. I think that I'd like to throw into the mix also the business of communication and dealing with feelings. I looked at the topic and thought to myself, there's more to it than just the finances, and you certainly have pointed that out. I think that it can be a challenge to can be a challenge to work through all of the different aspects of a marriage, and that it does involve a lot of communication. I like what you were saying about shared goals or coming to meet, have a meeting of the minds around goals. I think that's really important. Finances can be different from marriage to marriage because in traditional marriages, if you want to call it that, there is one partner that is working and the other partner is more of a homemaker. And back in my childhood days, that generally meant that the mother stayed at home, if indeed the wife was a mother and was a homemaker. These days, it can be either way, and thank God we're moving away from sexist definitions of marriage or sexist marriage arrangements. I've known a number of men that are stay-at-home dads and become the homemakers, if you will. And then you have marriages where both partners are working and can contribute a little bit more equally to finances. But there's more to a marriage than being equal with finances. I think that when you try to get down to the sharing of responsibilities is what it's all about. And I have been in a relationship with my husband, who I'm now married to for 6 years. I've been in a relationship for 17 years, and it's been a very challenging marriage. We both have baggage that we brought into the marriage, and at this point in time, I think we're dealing primarily with my baggage and how that is affecting the marriage, and that's taken a lot of communicating because we have toughed it out. I've had issues with him, and he certainly has had issues with me. So there are a lot of different things to look at, and I'm going to throw it back to you for a moment, Kat.
Well, yeah, there are a lot of different issues to look at, and here in Australia, before you walk down the aisle, it is required of the celebrant, not of the couple, it's required of the celebrant to advise the couple to have marriage counselling, premarital counselling, so that they're both on the same page. It is not legally required of the couple to have the premarital counselling, but the celebrant must have put that forward to them. And the reason for this is because a lot of relationships go sour over the business of marriage. That's where people lose their ability to be together anymore because they cannot meet eye to eye and they cannot find a way to work together. They're on different pages and often they're actually experiencing different values, and values turn into actions in regards to how things work in the home. And so we need to, you know, remember to check in on that, and that can be difficult if you feel like your voice is not being heard in your relationship, or if you feel like it has been talked over and over. But either way, checking in on it, it's like our business having a business plan. Every business that is run well has a business plan. It's a fluid document. It's required if you wish to get a loan with a bank or another financial institution because you need to have goals and projections and an idea of what on earth you're doing. And so as we're talking about it, you know, something that I hadn't considered until now really, but it makes sense to have a business plan. Now, when it comes to your marriage, now I am not married. My partner, David, and I are de facto husband and wife, I suppose. We just call each other partner. And I don't really have a desire to be married. I just see it as a contract between me, my partner, and the government, and I don't really want the government involved in my relationship, so I'm quite happy to just be the way we are. But we all have to consider each other's feelings and efforts, and it can be very difficult if you feel like you're the only person putting in and the other person is not. And as you were talking about, in a traditional marriage, one person would be making the money and the other person would be making the home. That there is still an equal amount of effort. The unpaid work is not lesser than the paid work. And this is something that in the business of marriage, there's often been a power struggle because the person with the money can buy the food, pay the bills, get the entertainment, pay for the holidays, the vehicle, etc. But they couldn't get a hold of that money if they didn't have the other person keeping the home fires burning and keeping everything on track. So equal effort must be considered. And if the other person is still not making as much money as the person who's got a full-time employment, but they're still making an effort towards goals for themselves as well as their relationship, then that also needs to be considered as an equal effort into the relationship. And on the other side of things, the person who works still needs to pull their weight when they're at home because, the person who's at home all the time would like some consideration, would like you to, put your towel, hang your towel up, put your washing in the basket, wash up after yourself. Just do those things that keep the place running to make it easier, because if the person who's at home wants to self-actualize beyond keeping the home, it's much easier if they're not tied to constant chores. So I think it's a balancing act. If you were living on your own without a relationship, you would have to keep home and work. But if you're in a relationship and one person is doing one thing and the other is doing nothing, then that is when you have a misbalance and the business of marriage is going nowhere. You're treading water and you're in danger of drowning. So I'd recommend to anybody who's considering getting married or considering committing to a long-term relationship that you get counselling to not just talk about your values and what you want out of the romantic side of your relationship, but actually what you want in an equal state of contribution in the business of the relationship.
I think that's a great idea. I did not come into my current relationship doing those things, and that's made things more of a challenge, and we've had to kind of feel our way along. In my previous relationship, we did have a discussion about those things, and one of the things that we decided, because I was unemployed at the time that we came together, was that there would be a prorated financial contribution to the relationship, and I, at that time, was more involved in domestic chores. In my current relationship, we have unequal incomes. We're currently living apart, and while we were living together, we had a challenging situation. I was contributing the majority of the income because my then partner, who is disabled, had a much lesser income. And one of the reasons that we separated is that there was an imbalance there. But we're working on that, and one of the things we've had to work very hard on has had to do with some of my behaviors which have been dysfunctional to the marriage. And so there's been a meeting of the minds, if you will. We've done a lot of consideration of how we want to proceed with regard to my behaviors. I am very pleased to see that my husband, who was not carrying his weight as far as household considerations go, is now proving to be very independent in that regard and taking charge of his life. And I really am proud of him and am happy for him that he's doing that. I wasn't sure if he'd be able to do that. I do think that it's really advisable, and I'm looking back and reflecting on my own experience to do what you were saying, Kat. I do think that it's important to discuss all aspects. I think that marital counseling prior to a marriage would be a very wise step to take, because there are a lot of different considerations. And I agree with you about how important it is for partners to realize that they contribute in different ways, and that if somebody is a stay-at-home person and takes charge, more charge of the domestic activities, that is an equal contribution. Because for some, to have somebody come in and do those jobs in a household would cost money, and it would cost a lot of money. And it takes a lot of effort to maintain a house and to maintain, certainly if you're caring for children, that is a very valuable, necessary thing to do and would cost a lot of money. So I'm kind of rambling around the subject, but I can see where there are a lot of different considerations in finding some equilibrium within a relationship and all of the different business aspects of marriage. One thing that I have discovered for myself is that marital counseling after the fact is more of a challenge, but can be a very necessary thing if there had been some kind of inequity prior and within the relationship. And I'm currently doing couples counseling, and I think it's opened the door to more communication. It's facilitated a better understanding of where each spouse is coming from, what each spouse is looking for, taking a look at the challenges involved, and trying to find a meeting of the minds. I think that's the bottom line, is that there does need to be a meeting of the minds if there is going to be a satisfying, productive, happy relationship. And that takes work. And I think that's one of the, from my standpoint at present, that is the business that's going on in my marriage, is working through past issues that have not been conducive to living together or even being in a relationship. And there have been questions about whether or not we would continue to remain in a relationship. So we're working through that stuff, and I'm grateful that we're both willing to do that. I think willingness is a key, no matter what you're looking at, what aspect of the marriage you're looking at. And of course, as Kat has pointed out, we're not just talking about marriages. That's just a term that we came up with, but any relationship is in a sense a marriage, whether or not it's legal or not. And so hopefully people that are listening to this will realize we're talking about committed relationships. And of course, people have different ideas of what a committed relationship is, but I think the important thing is that whatever commitments are made need to be adhered to, or there is indeed an imbalance, and that needs to be worked through. And that's what I'm doing in my marriage.
So just looking at one of the aspects of a long-term relationship when you're living together, and we're talking about the person who stays at home, the life of a homemaker, I just found a blog post by Investopedia.com dated the 21st of March 2020. So it's a fairly recent blog post. According to 2019 data from salary.com, if you're a stay-at-home mum or dad and pay for your services, you will be looking at a median annual salary of US $178,201. Why? Because many stay-at-home parents work around the clock with young children and can often mean nighttime feedings, greeting early morning risers, late-time meal prep. They wear many hats and must employ skills in order to be a tutor, negotiator, nurse, party planner, chef, for starters. And then they go into a few different things that somebody like in this role would take on, being a private chef, which is around $65 an hour, so easily $1,365 US a week. A house cleaner. That person, cleaners, make between $20 to $40 an hour on average. So the house cleaner would be earning $1,120 US a week or $4,480. Child care, so if you were to have a nanny, it's $20 an hour US. It would be more here in Australia because for somebody over 21, the award wage for somebody over 21 minimum is about $21.50 an hour. So for a 40-hour week, a stay-at-home parent on that salary would make $800 a week, which is $32 a month. A driver, if you hire a driver, it costs $22.95 an hour at the time of the writing of this article, US. If you're a stay-at-home parent paid similar, you'd be looking at nearly $4,000 a month, driving 6 hours a day, 7 days a week. Laundry service, this person has quoted the average price to be for wash, dry, folding clothes as high as $3 a pound of clothing, I guess that is, in weight. So they're looking at that, so would be $336 a week. And so all up with the everything that a stay-at-home parent does, yeah, you'd be looking at an annual salary of $178,201 US. So when you think about that, the person who's carrying that load is then not valued, undervalued, or taken for granted. Then you can see why people who are wearing that load begin to start to say they don't want to be in the relationship anymore, even though the other person financially holds the purse strings. The person who is doing everything at home is keeping it together and is saving the other person a lot of money. That's no small salary. That is a lot of money.
That is a lot of money. And when I look at, I don't know what the statistics are for average income here in the U.S., but I know years ago, probably 10 years ago, the average income for a working person was in the vicinity of $40,000 a year. And it was the minority that were earning the kind of money that you're talking about that a stay-at-home parent would be providing, or a stay-at-home partner would be providing for all these different services that you're talking about. And that right there can create an inequity. So I would say it would be my guess that there would need to be more sharing of the household duties, even for the working partner, if we're dealing with a stay-at-home situation. And, of course, if both people are working, then it becomes an issue of looking at who's earning more, who's earning less. If I mean, there's so many different aspects to look at from the financial end of things, and it's mind-boggling to me when I think about it.
Yeah, well, just look at the median household income in the USA for 2019. Was $68,703. It's an increase of 6.8% from 2018. We're in a census year this year, so Australia will have a new income estimate. A person working in the United States typically earns around $94,700. Per year, salaries range from $24,000 lowest average to $423,000 high average. So, I mean, I'm an outsider looking into the USA, as you're an outsider looking into Australia. And I hear of a lot of people on $8 an hour having three jobs to get by in the USA. So I don't know what this almost $100,000 a year is, because I know of a lot of people struggling to get work, let alone, you know, get well-paid work. In Australia, your average income is around $55,000 a year. But most people who have a profession typically earn between $75,000 to $150,000 a year. So still, even on that higher end, you know, you're still not meeting the income you'd have to find to pay for your stay-at-home mom or dad.
Of course, the Australian dollar is worth less than the U.S. dollar.
Yes.
But even so, it sounds like the income in Australia is better than it is here in the U.S. And
well, yes, but there's a high cost of living here.
Okay.
I think we've got one of the high cost of living nations in the world. Our house prices are pretty damn high. Our cost of food is pretty high, cost of clothing. When I went to the U.S. in 88 to see my family in Missouri, I couldn't believe how cheap it was to buy food and clothing. It's just not, you guys have got it good as far as food and clothing goes. One of the things you've got to consider with Australia is that we're smack in the middle of the southern hemisphere, dying underneath the northern hemisphere, where a lot of manufacturing for the world goes on. And so we have to pay for importing our goods. We make a lot of goods, but we don't manufacture a lot of the things that we need, and we have to import. So that puts a lot of financial pressure on to us. And so the cost of living goes up, and so it has to be indexed. You know, incomes have to be indexed as such as well.
Well, that's Very illuminating, Kat.
Yeah. Well, it is what it is. What it is, you know. Sounds all fantastic. Come live in Australia, but I mean, maybe if you were to average it all out, and you know, per capita, there's, you guys have got what, 300 million people. We've got about 25 million people.
Yeah.
So our cost of living is not spread out either. So as far as you guys go, you know, there's a lot more buying power for buying food and clothing and shelter than there is with us. We've got a more concentrated population, which makes it, you know, that's everybody has to throw in to cover the cost of all of that import, whereas you've got a lot more people, so therefore you've got a lot more opportunity to create manufacturing and other industries to support your people.
Right, right.
Mm.
Well, come on, kitty. Come on, come on. Tonight my cat has pulled down my curtains, broken the curtain rod, and so he's been quite a little devil.
That's a naughty pussy.
Yeah, well, he enjoys getting into trouble. His name is Pumpkin, but he could be renamed Little Devil. He's a very loving cat, and you're not going to scratch that, no. Well, you certainly have been doing your research on finances between the U.S. and Australia, and I thank you for doing that. I guess what I'm wondering is how we can talk a little bit more about what each party in a long-term relationship brings to that relationship, and how we can find equity within the relationship.
Yeah, I think that really boils down to the communication that you have between each other, and the recognition of what each other can bring to the relationship from the beginning, and the checking in as you go through the relationship is very important, that you check in and you discuss what it is that you want, because things change. Just as I said in the beginning with a business plan, if you were starting a business, you might think, I'm going to go into a business selling buttons, but as you get further into the scheme of things, you realize that your demographic prefers zippers, so you change and start to sell zippers instead. So the business of the relationship that you're in has the same outset. In the beginning, we preferred not to have children or pets. We were just going to have houseplants. But then as we went along, we discovered that adopting a puppy really made us happy, and then once we'd had the puppy for a long time, we realized that having a child would be something we'd like as well. So then the priorities change once you start adding things into the relationship and you move forward in that relationship. And it's like a good wine, you know, it develops, it changes, it grows, it has depth. What you've got to be careful of is that you don't end up souring the wine and it turns to vinegar. You've got to keep it in the right conditions so that it stays on its course, and when it's finally open and drunk, it's still beautiful to the palate. When you have any relationship, whether it's homosexual or heterosexual, you have two people that come together, it's usually two people, that come together, and they each have values that need to align. If the values don't align, you've got a big problem. So you need to have values that align, you need to have goals that align, and then Each person is going to have weaknesses and strengths that the other person can work with. Some weaknesses are going to be a problem, and they're the parts of the relationship that have the challenge, and they're the parts that force the other person and the person with that weakness to grow. Other parts of the relationship, the person with that weakness may have a great strength. So, for example, they have a weakness for eating chocolate every night, but they have a strength in standing up for themselves and their partner when their backs are against the wall, for example. So there's a weakness and there's a strength. What you need to do is decide what the two of you can, how the two of you complement each other in regards to your strengths, and how the two of you can work together in regards to your weaknesses. If you can't find a way through that, then the business of your relationship will begin to fold. And I think that's pretty much as plainly as I can put it. Again, I'm not an expert, and I'm no angel or, you know, martyr. I am probably going to have to go and have a big think about my own advice.
Well, I think you're showing a lot of wisdom, you know, and I liked what you were saying about the balancing act, because, you know, sometimes one part of the relationship, one person within the relationship starts to struggle, and it creates an inequity within the relationship, unless the other part of the other party in the relationship is willing to work with that person and try to find that homeostasis again. There's so many aspects to be looked at besides the financial aspect, and I think one of them is trying to help the other person to realize their dreams and to affirm that person's assets and to look at their liabilities with compassion. And, you know, that's what I'm working on at present. And it's a real challenge. Balance... you either come to a homeostasis and a meeting of the minds, or the relationship falls apart, as I see it.
Yes, absolutely. And that balance is so important. So if you're a listener and you're single and wanting to be in a relationship, then heed the warning that you must think about what your values are as far as business of a relationship goes before you enter into a relationship with somebody, and think very carefully about communicating your values to them and then listening for the other person's values. You know, it's a big red flag when values don't match, but, you know, you seem to be very compatible in the bedroom. It's a big red flag for a relationship to not work out. You need to be able to keep that relationship going if you want to have a relationship that keeps going, by looking at how everything can sync well. And as we said, stay in homeostasis. That's the big key, isn't it? Because the relationship cannot go any further if it hits a brick wall with one person doing nothing or doing the bare minimum, and the other person's bearing the entire load, no matter which way it is. Both working, one working, neither working. If one person is bearing the entire load and the other person's not, then you've got a big problem. Or and that also goes for things that you require in your relationship, needs that you require to be met. I mean, you may really need to have equal initiations of sex, not just be the one person initiating it and not the other. Or you may really need to have a certain amount of time every day where you just are together and have quality time. A book that I would recommend is The Five Love Languages. That book there will tell you a lot about how to communicate with your partner, to understand the way that you are in your relationship, in your needs, your love needs, as well as your business of love needs, and the needs that your partner has as well. When I read that book, I also expanded my mind on friendship needs as well. What people need. I didn't see it just as relationship in marriage, but also in friendships and in family ties. The way that people tend to need to be shown love is similar in different levels of appropriateness.
That's an excellent book. I read that a long time ago, and I vaguely remember it. It was a beautiful book, that's all I can say.
Yeah, it's definitely worth looking at and getting into. There's this term that's in the Urban Dictionary called spousonomics, S-P-O-U-S-O-N-O-M-I-C-S, spousonomics. So it's obviously the union of the word spouse and economics. And there's quite a few different books on the subject, so there's a lot that's out there for you to read and to consider. There's one here on goodreads.com, Spousonomics, Using Economics to Master Love, Marriage, and Dirty Dishes by Paula Schuschman, S-Z-U-C-H-M-A-N, and Jenny Anderson. That looks like it's pretty good. $4.99 on Kindle. I'm just trying to see if I can find another one to recommend. This book seems to have a lot of really good ratings. All Fair in Love and Economics, Spousonomics. No, it's the same book. So this seems to be the core book, and I'm sure there'd most likely be podcasts of these people being interviewed as well, which would be worth looking at if you wanting to go further into the subject, because having been a radio host myself in the past, I used to have a lot of authors want me to interview them and plug their book. That was the thing that they liked to do. And so if you get out there, most likely on YouTube, you may even find it, Spotify or with whatever your streaming service is that you like. See if you can find Paula Schuschman or Jenny Anderson or both of them, and I'm sure that they would be quite illuminating. Using Spousonomics, Using Economics to Master Love, Marriage, and Dirty Dishes. Here's a quote. At its core, economics is the study of how people, companies, and societies allocate scarce resources, Schuman and Anderson say, which happens to be the same puzzle you and your spouse are perpetually trying to solve. How to spend your limited time, energy, money, and libido in ways that keep you smiling and your marriage thriving. The trick is to A, boost those precious resources, and B, allocate them more intelligently. Do that, and before you know it, you'll be on your way to a better return on your marriage, end quote. So that I just read from knowledge.wharton.upenn.edu, Wharton University, Wharton, University of Pennsylvania. So it looks like it's a well recognized book and is most likely the one to check out.
Sounds like a great book, and I love the title. I couldn't help but laugh at that.
Yeah.
yeah, it's amazing how often there can be conflict over things like dirty dishes. and I liked what you were saying earlier about friendship. A marriage that is based solely on the aspects of the libido can be it can be a trap. I think that it's important for any intimate relationship to be based on friendship, and I've found that in my most successful relationship, and it's something I'm working on within my current relationship, that friendship as a good starting point builds a firm foundation. And I am best friends with my current husband, and I have a very good friend in my former partner. But I have to be careful not to fall into the trap of comparing, because it is like looking at apples and oranges. They both have their pluses and minuses, and I'm trying to focus on finding the pluses within my current relationship and finding common ground. And I think that, you know, I think it's very interesting, the subject of spousonomics as it is, and I'm glad that you've done some research on that. I have not done that. I was thinking more in terms of how things have worked out within my relationships around finances, and have tried to realize where there are equal contributions in different ways, not involving the money per se, but what you were talking about earlier, how there is a lot of value connected to things other than money, in terms of efforts that are put forth. So that was very insightful, I thought.
Yeah, so we have to recognize that when you walk into a relationship with somebody, you need to see where they're at in the beginning. That's going to be a big telling place. And you need to be open with each other as well. Don't hide things like debt. Don't hide things like addictions to gambling or addictions to anything. Don't hide dislikes or aspects of yourself that is in your shadow side. Put it out there. Put it on the table. This is me. You know, you're going to walk into a relationship with me. Am I someone you want to be in a relationship with? Do you want to spend time with me and in embroil your life with me, entangle your finances with me, and come out the other end 20, 30 years down the track? Do you reckon I'm just good enough for a bit of a fling? You need to be mature. You know, I think that as we're going into this next aspect of the human condition, we need to be mature about who we are, where we're at, what our weaknesses are, what our strengths are, what we have to offer, and we have to be open about that. People who are covert about it usually are, the narcissists, sociopaths or psychopaths, and they're after something only for themselves. But the rest of us who are not under that psychological condition, which also is an actual brain retardation that causes some of these people to be the way that they are, the rest of us who are just trying to get on with it, we're the reasonable-minded ones, right? So I'm setting aside the ones that don't operate on the regular human mindset. The agitators can just go over to the side for a minute. The rest of us need to be in a decent, reasoned mindset where we say, hey, look, this is who I am. I'm on the table here, right? It was a great romp in bed last night, and damn, you're beautiful, but hey, do you want to be with me for the rest of your life? Is this what you want? Because if it is, great, but if it's not, then I don't know if you should come along on the ride, and vice versa, because what you aspire to and what you're capable of doing are two different things, and you may be capable of doing what you aspire to, but it may take you 20 years, and that other person has to be able and willing to wait for it all to transpire if it's going to. Now, the father of my two oldest sons, when I got together with him, he was involved with a person who he and this other person were working on a mining venture. But the other person didn't meet his end of the bargain, and my ex-partner was putting in his end of effort, but the other person wasn't meeting it in the way that needed to be met, and so there was issues. And that sent my ex-partner on a pathway of hardship financially, having to then owe people money and work really hard to gain the ground that he'd lost. It took him a long time, but eventually he did find his way back to a secure financial footing, and he did eventually find his way back to making the kind of money he'd promised me in the beginning he would make. He and I didn't work out, and that's an aside from the fact that this was his journey. He got together with somebody else, and she had to be prepared to carry that load, that he was on that journey, and that it would take him a very long time to get to the place that he wanted to be. And she had to be prepared to go that journey with him. And for a long time, she was. So that was an agreement between them that worked out for quite a long time until other aspects of life affected their relationship, and I'm certainly not going to discuss that now. But it's an anecdote that I can put forward that you need to really decide. You know, and for myself, I was in a relationship with somebody who was monogamous, but I was not living with them for a couple of years in my 20s, and I was a single parent, and I had an autistic son, and as a result, I had very little ability to go out and work because I had to be at home for him, and I had to be at home for the school because I was constantly on call for that school to go into the school, to talk to him on the phone. I had to be there late. I had to drop him off early and stay late and then come back and pick him up on time but stay late in the afternoon. So my whole day was made up from focusing on his needs. And I wasn't able to work because my job was him. So I was very clear to the person that I was with that I didn't really have anything to offer as far as money went and as far as his needs being met in the home, you know, if he was to make a home with me, because I was barely getting my own home in order because I was always dealing with the needs of my son. And then as it turned out, my other son became quite needy as well for quite a while there. So I was really, really, really focused on having to be there for my children, and I could not bring in the kind of income that another person who had very easy children could bring in. So I was very clear. Am I someone you want to be with? Is this something you're prepared to take on? Because if it's not, then don't go with me. And that is something that you, as a mature adult, have to say when you're going into a relationship. You have to say it because the other person has to know what they're getting into. And in my opinion, having gone through that and then gotten together with my current partner, still under those circumstances because those boys were still difficult and still quite hard to raise, I kept the door open. I committed to the relationship and he committed to me as well, but I said, if you want to leave any time, the door is open, because I did not want to entrap him and I did not want him to feel it was too hard and he couldn't leave because of the circumstances that I was under. And in my mind, that is a difficult but mature way to deal with it, because you cannot turn around and say, look, this is my journey, and now you're in it, you're trapped. You have to be able to consider the other person's feelings and needs as you go along.
A lot of wisdom, Kat. I really appreciate your sharing.
The hard-earned stuff. Stuff, in quotes.
Yeah. Well, that's the business of life and experience. And it sounds like you have really worked very hard at being straightforward. And I think that's got to be a real asset, not only for you but for your relationship. And thank you for being so frank and sharing. I could be more frank in sharing, and I would do that, except that as far as my current relationship goes, I would be getting into territory that would possibly put one or the other of us at a disadvantage, and I don't want to do that on the air. But it would be time to move into meditation, and it is my turn to do that.
Yes.
I will try my best to do that. I have no idea where this is going to go. So I just invite people to take a moment to relax and let go of the cares of the day. Close your eyes if you feel comfortable doing that. If you don't, just find a spot to focus on, to let go of your surroundings, and just focus and breathe. And breathe deeply. Breathe in through your nose and out through your mouth. And do it to the count of four. One, two, three, four, release, one, two, three, four, breathe, two more times deeply. you to go deep within, to think about what your dreams are for yourself and for the one that you love, the one that you hope to love, the one that you hope to or are in a relationship with. I want you to imagine that person standing before you, whether it's your current partner, a past partner that you want to reconcile yourself with, or a hopeful partner, and just look into their eyes and see what it is within the soul of that person. And communicate with your eyes, looking into the other's eyes, the love that you feel for that person. Search their eyes for signs of discomfort or trouble, and reflect back what you can do to help soothe that person, to support that person, and to give of yourself to that person, and what it is that you would like to receive from that person in kind. And so, as you look into their eyes, open your soul to whatever your dreams might be and transmit them to their eyes. If they feel fearful, show them the love that you possess with inside. And dig deep for whatever insecurities you might feel, and allow that person to help soothe whatever troubles you may feel. Give, receive, and receive the knowing. And give the knowing that all is well within each other's souls. And know that no matter what comes to pass, that person is your friend, as you have been that person's friend. And so, close your eyes, your psychic eyes, and reflect in gratitude upon the gifts given and received through this exercise. And now, when you're ready, open your physical eyes, if they've been closed, and give thanks for whatever wisdom, whatever love, whatever sharing you've experienced through this exercise. And so, be at peace, be at one within yourself. Remember that nobody is perfect, that we all have defects or challenges, that we all have assets or strengths, that you are loved by the Creator of all that is, the universe, God, whatever you choose to call it, and know that all is well within your soul. And so, Kat, would you like to share anything about the Facebook page?
Oh, yes. Please join us on Facebook. We'd love to see you there at the Healing Circle with David and Kat. Get on there, like, comment, and share, please, so that we can keep going and we know that you're listening. I have people in my community come up and tell me that they listen to the radio show, and I'm absolutely loving that. But I'd also love it if you could make comments on the page and tell us what you'd like to have us talk about. So that's the Healing Circle with David Clark and Kat Edwards. We'd love to hear you just tell us what you'd like to talk about, but also put your 10 cents worth in on the subjects that we discuss every week. And what's your wisdom? We want to hear what your wisdom is. And if you put your comments in during the show, then we will read them out on the air. So make sure that you get involved, because we want to hear from you. And if you don't want to post a topic suggestion publicly on the page, then just shoot us a message. And we'll answer that message, and if it is a topic that is appropriate, then we'll discuss it between ourselves and put it on the air, and you may be invited to also join us if you wish. So make sure you get on to the Healing Circle with David Clark and Kat Edwards. Click like and tell your friends.
And if you're listening to the podcast, please consider joining us at the same day and time next week. And whether or not you choose to listen or participate, we'd welcome your presence. With that said, I wish you all a good night, good day. Please consider joining us. We'd love to have you.
Goodbye, everyone.
Goodbye.